This is the Happy Station, broadcasting to North and South America on 9,955 kilohertz from 1 to 155 UTC and from 15 to 1555 UTC.
This is station PCJ of Philips Radio, broadcasting on 31 meters, our weekly Friday program, which only lasts for 60 minutes.
Estación de la Alegría, The Happy Station Show. Well, just after 100 UTC, welcome to The Happy Station Show. Keith Powell with you here all the way in Taipei, Taiwan. And it's going to be really nice to have you with me for the next 55 minutes. And we actually have a number of things to get to. The only thought going through my head right now is, do we have enough time? Keeping my fingers crossed for that, because I hope that we do. We're going to be joined on today's show by Thomas Hood, who is a shortwave listener, ham radio operator, as well as musician. We're going to talk to him a little bit later on in the show. And I'm also going to tell you a little bit more about the programs that we have coming up on December 31st this year. So get a pen and paper handy, because I'll tell you about it after we take a listen to our first piece of music. Here's Sammy Davis Jr. and the Candyman going out to Javier in Chile.
Chocolate, malted candy, gumdrops, anything you want. You've come to the right man, because I'm the Candy Man.
Ooh. Who can take a sunrise?
Who can take a sunrise?
Sprinkle it with you.
Sprinkle it with you.
Cover it with chocolate and a miracle or two. The Candy Man.
Candyman.
Oh, the Candyman can.
The Candyman can,
'cause he mixes it with love and makes the world taste good.
Makes the world taste good.
Who can take a rainbow?
Who can take a rainbow?
Wrap it in a sigh.
Wrap it in a sigh.
Soak it in the sun and make a groovy lemon pie. The Candyman.
The Candyman.
The Candyman can.
Candyman
can, 'cause he mixes it with love and makes the world taste good.
Makes the world taste good.
Candyman can, 'cause he mixes it with love and makes the world taste good. The Candyman can.
The Candyman can.
The Candyman can, 'cause he mixes it with love and makes the world taste good.
Makes the world taste good.
Yes, the Candyman can, 'cause he mixes it with love and makes the world taste good.
Makes the world taste good.
A Candyman. A Candyman. A Candyman.
Sammy Davis Jr. beginning today's edition of the Happy Station Show for this September 10th, 2009 for listeners in South America and the Caribbean on 9955 kHz in the 31 meter band. Now, I think we'll get to this right now. Yes, Johan saying get to it right now. Okay. Well, as you may or may not know, December 31st this year falls on a Thursday, which of course is the day that Happy Station airs. Now, the two programs on December 31st are going to be special ones. Now, the first thing I should tell you is the times that I'm going to give are the times after the November time shift, when in North America they move the clocks, was it forward or backwards or upside down or sideways or whatever. But anyway, 1 hour UTC will become 2 hours UTC. And 1500 UTC will become 1600 UTC after the time shift in November. Okay, so that's out of the way, so hopefully there's no more confusion, even though I think I've confused myself right now. Anyway, as I was saying, December 31st is a Thursday, the day that Happy Station airs, and the two shows at 100, which is now, or I should say 200 and 1600 UTC, that's 200 and 1600 UTC in December, will be 2 hours each. Now, the program at 200 UTC is going to be a special New Year's Eve program, and we're going to have some special things involved in that one, and I'm not going to tell you anything more about that right now. We'll keep that as a little bit of a surprise. But the program that is going to be very special will be the transmission at 1600 UTC. We will be doing the show live from Hong Kong. And a couple of people that I know at RTHK, which stands for Radio Television Hong Kong, are letting us use a studio which overlooks Victoria Harbor, one of the busiest harbors in the world. And we're going to be doing the show from there for two reasons. First of all, we're going to be doing the show live. It's New Year's Eve. And 1600 UTC is 11 o'clock in the evening Hong Kong time. Now, as I said, the show will be 2 hours. So at 1700 UTC, I think you kind of figured out where I'm going. That's right. We're going to be doing the New Year's countdown while overlooking the big fireworks display that happens every year in Hong Kong at Victoria Harbour. Now, we are going to be in a studio, but luckily, our friends at RTHK are letting us patch into the domestic programs that are going to be on at that time. So we will have the sound of the fireworks and the countdown as it happens at 16:59 UTC on December 31st. Now, the next thing is, since after the countdown, it will be 2010, January 1st, where we are. That's in Taiwan and Hong Kong and in China. That means we're going to be in the new year, but you're still going to be listening in the old year. So to welcome in the new year and to say goodbye to the old air, the old year for you, at around 17:30, we're going to be announcing the winners for the year-end contest here on The Happy Station. Now, this contest will be open to those who enter either by email or by snail mail. Now, what you will need to do is you will have to send an email or a snail mail with something that you heard on the show. And it's going to be a message that will be both used at the 100 and 1500 UTC that could appear at any time during the program. So you have to mention the time that you heard the message, what came before it, and what came after it, and you'll be entered into the lucky draw. Now, let's take a listen to that message right now. Okay, now I know some of you are saying, wait, I don't understand Morse code. That's not going to help me at all. Well, no, you don't have to know Morse code. You just have to write down the time and date that you heard that Morse code message and send it along. And of course, if you do understand Morse code and you want to translate it, you're welcome to do so. I'd love to find out how many people can actually figure it out. But that's not the important part. The important part is that you hear it. So, of course, today I announced that we're going to take a listen to it so you can have an idea what it is. But next week, it will appear at any time during the show, and I'm not going to tell you when that is. It could be maybe midway through sentence, I stop, it comes on. Right after it, I continue as if nothing had happened. Okay, all right. Now, the prizes that we are going to have are the following. The first prize is a Sanjen ATS 909. The second prize is a Sanjen ATS 606A. The third prize are all the three books about international broadcasting by Jerry Berg. The fourth prize is a one-year membership to Communication, the monthly magazine issued by the British DX Club. And the fifth prize is going to be for 10 winners. And people that win the fifth prize, well, 10 of you anyway, will receive a copy of the CD Easy Come, Easy Go by Tom Meyer, songs that he recorded for The Happy Station. All right. Now, all the details here can be found at The Happy Station Facebook page. So if you're already on Facebook, just do a search for The Happy Station Show and you will find all the details there and everything. And like I said just now, if you know Morse code or not, it is not important. You just have to have heard the message. But, you know, if you know what the message means, by all means, send it along. All right, now time for more music because I've been babbling away too long. Here's the Dutch Swing College Band with Teddy Wilson with Sweet Georgia Brown. The Dutch Swing College Band with Sweet Georgia Brown featuring Teddy Wilson on piano. You're listening to The Happy Station Show for listeners in South America and the Caribbean. Now, one thing that I find interesting about doing the show are the listeners. I have met some very interesting people, and people that have so many different tastes and interests and jobs that every now and again, I like to have them on the show because if I find them fascinating, hopefully you, that's right, you, the one person who's listening, will also find them interesting as well. Now, a while ago, I came across Thomas David Hood. He is an amateur radio operator and a regular shortwave listener. And when I was reading a bit more about his website, which is www.thomas with TOMASDAVIDHOOD.com, that's Thomas without an H, thomasdavidhood.com, I realized he's also a musician and composer. So I thought, this is interesting. He has so many tastes and so many interests. So why not call him up and have him on the show? Thomas, I want to thank you for joining us here on The Happy Station. Before we get to your music, what I found that was interesting is that you are a ham radio operator.
Yes, that's one of my first passions.
So how did you get interested in ham radio?
Well, I was probably maybe 8 years old, 9 years old, and I discovered a little Sony 4-band receiver that my parents had in their room. I snuck it out of the room, took it outside, and started playing around with it and discovered exotic sounds and foreign language stations and things, and I was fascinated. And the more I listened, the more I discovered that these strange sounds and people speaking weird things were coming from all over the world. And my imagination took off like wildfire, and I imagined I was traveling the world. And that has never changed.
So you're not just a ham, you're also, would you consider yourself a regular shortwave listener?
I am definitely a shortwave listener.
Mm-hmm. Something interesting about ham radio, even though I don't have a ham license, is I sometimes will enjoy tuning into them because I feel like I'm a fly on the wall in some conversation.
Yeah, it definitely can be colorful sometimes too.
Have you, just out of curiosity, I mean, you know, those hams that I've spoken to before, and they've said that, you know, sometimes they've gotten into arguments over ham radio.
Yeah, you know, ham radio is a communications medium that allows you to sit back, relax, and truly social network with people all over the world without wires. You know, in a sense, ham radio is the first social network that ever existed.
Well, you know, and another aspect of it, actually, that is quite interesting. I mean, right now, we're using modern technology. We're using Skype to communicate. And it's just a matter of somebody, it's somewhere in the world, just pulling a plug or switching a switch, and we'd be cut off. But I suppose, of course, with ham radio, the only thing that can cut you off is if you have a power cut.
A power cut or perhaps certain atmospheric conditions. I am heavily into radio propagation and space weather, and so there are physical switches that could occur that will limit your radio wave from getting from one end to another. And shortwave listeners, you know, they know that firsthand. If they're listening to a station and there's some fading going on, or perhaps we have, during the active part of a solar cycle, a very large solar flare, we could actually have a radio blackout. So there are circumstances that are similar to somebody pulling a plug someplace or a wire becoming disconnected. But by and large, shortwave radio, for instance, does allow an opportunity for connectivity that may not exist sometimes with wires.
So you're interested in ham. You first started off, you know, tuning a small Sony shortwave radio. And then what made you decide to get a ham license?
Well, the fascination of hearing all of these foreign stations and exotic locations, I guess my desire was always to participate in some way. So the second phase of my growth as a radio person was to explore becoming a radio broadcaster myself. And at a college station, I became a radio DJ, and Actually, I started that while I was in high school, but it was a college station. And I explored broadcasting, did a lot of my own practice, demo tapes and whatnot. And eventually I made my way into the military as a signal corpsman. And I did a lot of satellite and tactical communications, but we also engineered a lot on HF. So before I was a ham radio operator, I was actually on the shortwave bands as a military communicator. And finally, after moving out of the Army career, I said, you know, it's time that I got serious and got my ham radio license. So the year after I no longer was in the military, I pursued looking up the local ham club, the group of hams that help each other and mentor you, and they helped me get my license, and that was my first start in the amateur side of communications.
I suppose that getting a ham license when you got yours was probably a lot more difficult than it is now. I mean, a lot of countries have dropped the requirement to know Morse code, correct?
Yeah, it was very interesting, actually. I had, as a kid, tried to study Morse code. And in those days, we had no computers and those sorts of things. We had perhaps tapes or record player discs, the old phonograph. And I would listen to that as a kid. And I did okay, I suppose, but I never truly pursued it. When I finally had to get my ham radio license, I was forced to learn code at 5 words a minute. But at that time, it wasn't just receiving. You had to prove that you could send it. And the test that I took for Morse code at that time as a novice only required 3 amateur, at the top level, amateur radio operators to test me. Well, I was working at a very large corporation, and they took me down into the corporate lunchroom, which was extremely busy and very noisy and distracting. And they sat me down at a table with a code oscillator and a Morse code key, and they gave me a technical book, a technical engineering book, and said, send one page to us. Boy, I was nervous, and I was very distracted. And it was technical English. It wasn't just conversational stuff. So sweaty palms anyway, I made it through that, and that was my initiation, and I passed that part. Then the next part, of course, was to pass the question pool, which includes, you know, some questions about the regulations, like what frequencies were we authorized on, and what is an antenna, what is a radio, and how do signals get from here to there, and, you know, some basic technical questions. And finally, I passed that. But then you had to wait a couple of months for the Federal Communications Commission here in the United States to actually issue a call sign and then send it to you via regular mail, because we didn't have the internet, we didn't have instant access to information. It took a long time, so every day I'd be watching that mailbox. And the very day that I got the license and I was authorized to operate, I had already set up a station, a very simple transceiver. In those days, it was part solid state and part tube, and I had a long wire draped out in the back of my yard. I finally got on, and of course, I was only authorized to work on Morse code because that was my novice license. So I got on the air and started calling CQ, CQ, and then my call sign. And this was in Connecticut, and I waited, and sure enough, somebody answered me. The moment they answered and asked what my name was, I started replying, and about halfway through my first sentence, I couldn't remember my name, I couldn't remember who I was, I couldn't remember Morse code, nor English. And I could swear it lasted 5 minutes, that mental blank. I'm sure it didn't last 5 minutes, but it felt like 5 minutes. But yeah, it was quite an amazing moment of my life.
You know, it's interesting that you said that you were in a busy lunchroom while you were sitting there sending some messages with all these people around and everything. I suppose now, if you look back at it, you could look at it in a more philosophical way, saying, "Well, you know, I did the test in this environment, and all the noise is just the background noise that you get with HF."
Exactly, and I think that's what they had in mind is if he could pull it off in this environment, he definitely would make it on the air.
So when you like you said, your first time that you went on, you had this mental block and you forgot your name. What happened? Was the other person at the other end going, "Are you okay? Are you new? Are you all right?"
I have a feeling that the other person, who by the way was extremely patient with me, realized that I was very new because, you know, in those times call signs were issued sequentially. And I had a rather brand new sounding call, I'm sure. And I was on a novice band. And, of course, this person I discovered later was a ham radio operator for quite a while. And I'm sure was probably smiling at my attempts to gather my wits about me.
But eventually everything worked out, right?
Oh, it was a fascinating and great conversation. At 5 words a minute, of course, it probably lasted a good half hour to 45 minutes. We didn't exchange a lot of information, but just that connection through a new language. I still feel this. It's a language. It's not just a mode, but it is a language. So it's like speaking a whole new language, learning perhaps German or French or something, and actually going to that country for the first time, sitting down at a little cafe and asking to order a meal, you're sitting there stumbling, trying to figure out how to properly, with proper etiquette, say, "May I please have a glass of wine and some, you know, whatever's on the menu," and of course trying to decipher the menu. And I think it's very similar.
What is the furthest place that you've communicated with?
I have communicated to every corner of the globe. Madagascar, Antarctica, various countries in Europe and Asia and South America, African continent, all sorts of places around the world, and it has never stopped fascinating me.
Let's take a listen now to some of the music that Thomas has composed himself. This is one of his recent recordings, which is available at his website, thomasdavidhood.com. It's called The Offering. Thank you. another aspect of you which is very interesting is that you're also a musician.
I am, and that started also at about 9 years old. Mm-hmm. My oldest brother began to do two musical endeavors in his high school career, and that was he joined the choir, and he started playing guitar. And of course, as a nine-year-old, I wanted to be like Big Brother, and so I tagged along with him as much as I could and was, you know, in awe at his skill in making this music. And I tried to learn music at that early age, got myself into a small guitar class and those sorts of things. But a nine-year-old, what, you know, how much dedication and passion can you possibly have to stay with something consistently? Radio, of course, drew me every day because I could tune around and passively travel the world. But music took a lot of work. And, of course, other things interested me, like going out and pretending I was part of Star Trek or something. So the music thing kind of went by the wayside. In high school, I picked up an electric guitar and did okay, but I had no mentoring. As a military, a child of the military, we often moved. So as I began to integrate with maybe some local musicians, then all of a sudden my roots were pulled up and I'd have to move to another part of the country. So I never had that solid foundation, nor the dedication. And occasionally through, you know, my young adulthood and you know, different things that I've done, I'd pick up the guitar and do some things, and, very simple and on the amateur side. But about 2 years ago, always percolating in the back of my mind is this driving passion. Boy, I really would like to pursue music. I'd really like to let that creative side out. And, you know, 2007 came and an opportunity presented itself for me to obtain some really nice guitars and equipment, and I did that. I just totally dived in and became amazed at the worldwide community of like-minded people that utilize the internet to interconnect with each other, teaching each other, showing, you know, how to do this, how to do that. And no longer did I have to depend on some local musician to help mentor me, but I could actually join in with groups on the internet and share things virtually to increase my skill or to show off what I'm doing. You know that whole interactive thing of the internet has blown wide open the musical community, in my opinion. It's unbelievable.
So with music then, what was the, before you got heavily interested in music in 2007, what kind of stuff, let's say I was at your home, what kind of stuff would I be listening to on your stereo?
Oh, I'm very eclectic. you will not hear rap or any of those sorts of things, although I respect, you know, the skill that it takes. My interests have always been around progressive rock, classical rock, some folk, Americana, maybe some country and western, but it wasn't until I reached about the age of 40 that country western even attracted me. Interesting how that happened. You hit a certain age and all of a sudden it starts sounding kind of like me. It kind of an odd thing. Earlier than that, I would swear up and down that I would never ever listen to country, but it has captured me. And so there's kind of a mix of things. I'm not super heavy into the current pop scene so much. You know, bubblegum music is what we used to call it, and there's various terms for it now. But by and large, progressive rock definitely calls my heart. Pink Floyd, Rush, Kansas, yes, all of those old phenomenal groups of musicians have always drawn my ear.
You know, there's just recently somebody asked me if I had to choose five songs that I could ever own, what would they be? And one of them actually...
What a question.
Yeah, and I know it was difficult, but one of them actually is a recording by Procol Harum, made in the 1970s with the Edmonton Symphony Orchestra called Conquistador. I don't know if you've ever heard that.
I may have. I don't recognize it at the moment.
But it is absolutely phenomenal. My second one was actually not a song, but an album by Genesis called Selling England by the Pound.
Sure, good stuff.
Great album. So is this the kind of stuff that you like to perform and compose?
I'd say that if, when I begin to sit down and just free flow, and that's where my musical creativity becomes something of substance, it seems like a lot of those influences come out and I gravitate toward things that are more progressive rock or folk. I've tried to force myself during periods to stay just on an acoustic guitar, and that forces a new skill set in my fingers, you know, picking and working the fretboard. So I would say that, you know, a touch of Americana I gravitate toward just because the acoustic sound draws that out. But if I electrify at any point, I begin to gravitate toward something that, you know, might be some early Moody Blues or something very Floydish, maybe a Queensryche look or feel, you know, to it, a tone quality that people identify. My music's been described even as maybe Satrianish. Again, that's because I immersed myself so much as a radio DJ and as just a listener of music into so many ranges of music that all of those elements kind of come out when I create some new sound. You know, I have to say this also, that the equipment that I have allows that freedom. I think some starting out musicians get very frustrated thinking they don't have a lot of skill or they don't have a lot of potential, but what they're really hitting is a wall in the capabilities of their equipment. And the first time I heard that concept, I was listening to an interview with I think it's Ian Anderson of Jethro Tull, I think that's his name, and he was talking about his playing the flute and how he would literally torture himself in trying to make the flute sound the way he envisioned it or felt it in his spirit, and never felt in all of those years with Jethro Tull that he ever really accomplished becoming a great flute player. Until somebody said, you know, you need to learn the flute, not just on your own, but in a very classical way, and learn the proper way to use a flute, and get yourself a good flute. So combined with retraining himself classically and getting the right flute, well, he said, the flutes that I have been playing were never truly that great of an instrument, but when I got the top-of-the-line flutes, really high-quality flutes, all of a sudden they were playable. And I discovered it wasn't so much that I had a physical difficulty or a mental difficulty, the instrument itself was difficult, and that was my roadblock. And so in 2007, when I got my equipment, I tried to make sure that I got something that was higher in quality and allowed me to let loose whatever skills I did have without any other hindrance. The only hindrance now is my creativity and the skills that go with that. So again, what I do is I'm on an instrument that lets me more freely express myself, and what comes out are all of those root elements that I've learned and heard and that became part of my fabric as a person. And music is that fabric. I think everybody who listens to music more than just, you know, in passing when they're driving maybe in their auto from A to B and just happen to tune around and hear some music, but somebody who sits down and puts on a pair of headphones or sits down and your program has a lot of music and they just truly immerse themselves in music, becomes more of their fabric. And when you begin to create music, that fabric just begins to express or show itself in those colorful patterns of your nature.
You know, before we started doing today's interview, I asked you if you're in Missoula, Montana, or if you're close by. The reason why I mentioned Missoula, Montana, because that's the only part of Montana that I've ever been to. Wow. I had a friend of mine, she's originally from Missoula, Montana, and about 15 years ago, when she was going back home to visit her parents, she said, why don't you come and pay me a visit? And I spent 1 week there. Didn't get to see much of the rest of Montana, but it made me think of one thing. I mean, you compose your own material. Is the surrounding, which is absolutely beautiful, does that influence you in what you're going to write?
I believe so, yeah. It's hard to quantify with English, but when my stress level gets very high in my job, I don't do music for a living, I don't do radio for a living, But I can get very stressed with computer technology. Things can get very frustrating. I can just walk out of the building, stand there for a moment, and begin to just let all of that stress evaporate into the air and look at the mountains, look at nature, look at the beauty around me, and realize that this beauty has been here for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. And my stress is just a little bit of a moment in the scheme of things. So my surroundings allows me to get this larger perspective. And so musically, if I'm going to sit down and begin to flow with that creativity, obviously the beauty of the nature and the openness. Montana is called the Big Sky Country because we're wide open, a lot of space. You can breathe. You have room to just expand. And I think musically, that sense of freedom continues to allow me the right mindset to just be free with my ideas and express myself.
And what about talking to other ham operators? Has it ever happened after a conversation, because of the way the conversation went, you get an idea?
I think sometimes some things can be sparked in a conversation. I've had amazing friendships develop because of ham radio. And that brings up a side point, and I'm sorry if I deviate too much, but one of the aspects of communicating on radio to various countries and things is the cultural exchange that takes place. You begin to see that the world has much more to offer in the richness of relationships, but also in perspective. Somebody who lives, for instance, in Europe has a different sense of history, a different sense of belonging to the human race, a different angle of looking at world events and whatever. So it broadens you and sets you free. So in terms of sparking a musical idea, that too, I've met other musicians. We've begun to talk and you know, lo and behold, oh, you're a musician as well. And we begin to discuss things. And I've heard people say, you know, you ought to listen to more of this sort of jazz or this sort of thing. And then that in the context also of hearing a historical thing about maybe some local castle or something. And it's amazing how conversations can, and you know, take you on those little journeys where they describe their local history or whatever. And then a thought is triggered, and then musically you pursue that. Those kind of musical things can be sparked by anything, of course, but ham radio does give you a unique interaction with a broader range of humanity, a broader spectrum of humanity.
Thomas Hood, thank you very much for taking some time out to talk to us today here on the Happy Station. It's been a lot of fun.
I appreciate the opportunity. I used to listen to Happy Station on Radio Nederland back when I was very, very young, so it's really kind of a neat full circle thing to actually participate in a new way with something that's connected to my early shortwave passion. Thank you.
That was The Robin by Thomas Hood. You can check out his website. It's www.thomasdavidhood.com. So, Thomas, thank you very much for joining us on the second half of this Happy Station show. And we've actually come to the end. Now, once again, if you want to find out all the details about the special contest that we are running and our special live program, you can find it out at the Happy Station Facebook page, or you can send me an email. My email address is pcj.happystation@gmail.com. That's pcj.happystation@gmail.com. Our snail mail address is Happy Station Show, 8th floor, number 47, Lane 31, Section 1, Sanmin Road, Banqiao, Taipei, Taiwan, ROC 22070. I'm not going to repeat it because I don't have that much time, but you can get it at the WRMI website at www.wrmi.net. Click on Happy Station, and you'll find the snail mail address there. All right, now, before we end off, I just want to tell you what's coming up today at 1500 UTC for listeners in North America and the Caribbean. We had a listener a while ago that sent me an email. He listens to us in Cologne, Germany. And he said he heard me play Heino on the show a number of weeks back, who was a German Schlager singer. And he said, why don't I do a Schlager show just like the Schlager parties that we have here in Cologne? And having been to Cologne and having been to a Schlager party, I went, why not indeed? So the show today at 1500 UTC is going to be very, 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 very silly. And you'll have an opportunity to hear my odd pronouncement or my odd pronunciation of the German language. You remember that TV show from the UK, Allo Allo? You know, the way I pronounce German, it sounds like I should be a character in that TV show, you know. All right, that's coming up today at 1500 UTC. So, on behalf of our technician, Kevin Lee, Johann Backer, who's been busy sending out the QSL cards, this is Keith Perron all the way in Taipei, Taiwan, where it's been raining for the past few days, saying so long, au revoir, auf Wiedersehen, adios amigos, and sayonara.
This is the Happy Station, broadcasting to North and South America on 9,955 kilohertz from 1 to 155 UTC and from 15 to 1555 UTC.